So I did this DJ course. It kind of gave a little bit of confidence. And so, yeah, I went off to study a BTEC in music technology, which was quite wide ranging, which was helpful. And then with that, went off to university. I thought if I moved to London, do a course there, I might get a bit closer to this industry. Bearing in mind, I'm kind of living and coming from a sort of small town in the Midlands where you didn't really, nothing was on your doorstep like that to inspire you. You wouldn't bump into somebody that works in film or television or music or anything really.
Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11% podcast. We explore roles and opportunities within the creative industries with the aim of improving diversity, in addition to promoting, providing a platform, and shouting about awesome women and those identifying as non-binary. For episode 78, we've headed to the southwest of England, to Bristol precisely, and are joined virtually, of course, by Foley artist Louise Brown. Foley, I hear you say. It is a rather mysterious creative career, and to give those of you who are still scratching your head a quick insight, Foley is the reproduction of everyday sound effects that are added to films, animations, commercials, radio and podcasts, and so forth in post-production. The aim is to add more texture and depth to what we are watching and listening to. Think of seeing and hearing a horse trotting along a cobblestone street of your favourite period drama. It is highly unlikely that that was the animal's actual hooves making that sound. But why is it called Foley, I now hear you ask? Well, it is all to do with a chap named Jack Foley, who developed a unique method for performing sound effects live and in synchrony with the picture during the Hollywood golden era of cinema. His namesake is now credited to all sound effect makers forevermore. But enough of the past. Let's return to the present and today's fabulous guest. I met Louise Foley Brown, as she's affectionately known to me, about 10 years ago, when she was still carving a career in sound post-production. We worked together at an agency where she was moonlighting as a social media strategist, fitting in her sound work around her bread and butter job. Prior to this, Louise built up her knowledge of sound, editing and effects, firstly through achieving a BTEC in music technology, going on to achieve a bachelor's degree of the same title from the London College of Music and Media. Juggling a number of different roles, such as running a kit hire company and, as I mentioned, a social media strategist, after graduating, she began working on sound design for advertising and after a couple of years landed a role at a post house as a sound effects and Foley editor. Whilst there, she worked towards being a Foley artist. And after a number of years, five to be precise, she established herself as a freelance Foley artist and sound effects editor. I recall once bumping into Louise, quite by accident, in a stairwell one weekend many years ago. Wearing thick socks and 1950s heels, and I should clarify here, far from Louise's everyday style. Of course, she had her audio recorder and microphone to hand, but it was one of those moments of pure delight capturing someone at work and silently leaving without a word because of what she was doing. Also, the absolute joy of seeing her sporting such a get-up still makes me chuckle. So where might have you heard Louise's work without even realising it? On a number of episodes of Doctor Who, and also one of my personal favourite, Netflix's Sex Education, and on films such as Killers Anonymous, Darkness Visible, and Last Summer. She is credited as a Foley artist and Foley editor on countless other productions and commercials, far too many to mention here, but a quick IMDb search will reveal the extent and breadth of her talents. So, Lou Foley Brown. I can't deny I'm super excited to be catching up with you and learning how you actually make, I don't know, sounds like raindrops falling on a beret in post-war Paris. Welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Hi, Renee.
I know I've just given a quick tour and history of what Foley is, but as the woman doing the job, can you give us an insight to what it is a Foley artist does and how it works?
On set, you do have somebody recording all the sound during filming, but you know, these big fluffy microphones, they're designed to be picking up dialogue. You don't necessarily pick up or want to pick up the sound of footsteps or somebody rustling a piece of paper. A big SWAT team come running out. They don't create the same sound that you want to be hearing coming back when you're watching it in the cinema or on TV. We're kind of tasked afterwards, once a film or television program, whatever's been edited, to kind of not only just provide those sounds, make sure those footsteps are there, make sure the clothing sounds are there, but also to kind of embellish and kind of make it exciting. It's entertainment, you know, so when that SWAT team come running in, you want to hear you know, an army of feet and the, you know, the rattle of their guns, the jangle of their handcuffs or whatever. It's designed to kind of help make those stories exciting and make them real. We record all of these sounds that you can see. Anything that these characters, be them human or animal or alien, anything that they interact with, we recreate those sounds in the studio.
So you're watching the visual and then making the sound?
Yeah, as close in time as you can get it. There's always a bit of delay. Sometimes you have to re-record. If you get it first take, well, you know, you earn yourself a biscuit, generally. You try and predict what's going to happen, but you play through and you record as you go. And then generally, you know, we'll go through and do all the feet in the episode or the film, and then we'll record all the, we call them spot effects, Foley effects, so, you know, like a glass or smoking a cigarette or knocking on the door. And we'll also record all the clothing sounds as well, the clothing movements. Which, by the way, isn't always, often that's a creative thing, but we kind of have to cover, particularly cloth, we recover all these things anyway in case the dialogue needs to be re-recorded again, be it for creative decisions, to change a line. Maybe it was a bit duff when they recorded it at the time, we need to get it a bit clearer. Or if you're changing it to another language for foreign language submissions, so if you're redubbing it, then you've got to replace all these sounds anyway. So when you take away original dialogue, you've got nothing there.
I'd like to have a little insight into a few trade secrets. I mentioned horses on cobblestones. Mm-hmm. So I know, well, I've heard, obviously I don't know because I'm not a fully artist, but coconut shells are good for horse feet. Mm-hmm. And I've also heard umbrella is good for bird wings.
Very large bird wings, dragon wings. Very good for dragon wings. if you want to go bird wings, go smaller. Go with feather dusters or cloth, things like that.
So what are some other kind of key or regular kind of things that you use to create or recreate a sound effect?
It was interesting you mentioned, was it coconut shells for the horse feet? I remember using, don't ask me why, for some reason I had to create tennis sounds, the sounds of a tennis match for Wimbledon, mm-hmm. The championships, not using tennis balls or rackets. And I remember using a coconut shell covered in some cloth for the sound of a tennis ball being hit, which took some thinking, to be honest. How do you make sound a tennis ball without using one?
Why were you not allowed to use tennis ball?
It was a creative soundscape we were making. We just wanted to have a go at using the imagination, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, in the Foley state on the whole, we can use corn flour or, you know, custard powder. We use those for snow footsteps. So you stick them in a sock or a pillowcase, mm-hmm. and just kind of crunch it around, and you get that crunchy snow footstep sound. It's not practical, you know, unless you're recording in January or in Canada. You're not really going to get that, you know, you can't bring the snow into the studio. So the corn flour kind of replicates that crunchy sounds. It's a challenge. How do we get these sound effects correct? Okay, you work around it. And I think also, yeah, with other feet as well, I use hockey pucks for hooves, for sheep and cows, deer, mm-hmm. Antelope and so on. Gloves. If you get a pair of leather gloves with some paper clips on the end, really good for cats, and chickens, you know, any kind of animal with nails. I don't use them for dogs. I just use my hands and just pad them about unless I want them to be really naily. But sometimes it can be distracting. So dogs, kind of floppy, fluffy, they're just my hands. But, you know, cats or chickens are a little bit more clackety. Yeah, gloves with paper clips on the ends.
So you mentioned a Foley stage. So what is that?
We call them Foley stage, and I don't know why. Probably old school, back to Jack Foley back in the 20s, I'm not sure, but it's a recording studio. It's just, it's a very messy one. You've got a room, some of them are quite big, like the size of a cinema. Some of them are a lot smaller. You just have a screen, be it TV screens or a big projector. And then on the ground, which is where it makes it messy, is you've got squares, enough space to walk in, of different floor surfaces. So we've got sand, gravel, different kind of concrete, smooth and hard, and different wood surfaces. I don't know why we call it this Foley stage, but yeah, in the studio, we'll just move the mic around to these different surfaces. And you'll find around the walls, you've got doors and latches and ropes and chains and boxes filled with junk, really. I mean, not to me, they're treasure, but, you know, absolute junk, everything. And this is so that everything is to hand, you know, because if you're performing all these sound effects for a film or program, you know, it's not practical to go out to all these different stages. So you do it all in this Foley stage in the studio, and you just use everything you've got around you. Most things should be to hand.
I would say sound and working with sound is quite niche in terms of a career focus. So I'm wondering, how did you discover or find, you know, your love for all things oral? And, you know, can you take us through your career journey from where it began up until now?
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. Yes, it is a bit niche. Yeah. Okay. So I was working, I used to work in a factory years ago, and I thought, oh, balls to this. I wanted to work in music because I was really slightly obsessed with, you know, pop music and the whole industry, but I didn't know how to get there. So I went to study, actually. I went to study at college, music technology. I thought maybe be a, you know, a record producer or something like that, because mostly because I didn't know what else. You either were a musician, you were a journalist in the industry, or you recorded it, and that was about it. I'd done a DJ course about a year previously, and I think it was the first time that I'd accessed the music world whilst having absolutely no skill set in music itself. Got kicked out of recorder club at school, kicked out of ocarina club as well. Gutting, absolutely gutting. You know, way to crush my dreams, guys. Yeah, so I did this DJ course. It kind of gave a little bit of confidence. And so, yeah, I went off to study a BTEC in music technology, which was quite wide-ranging, which was helpful. And then with that, went off to university. I thought if I moved to London, do a course there, I might get a bit closer to this industry. Bearing in mind, I'm kind of living and coming from a sort of small town in the Midlands where you didn't really, nothing was on your doorstep like that to inspire you. You wouldn't bump into somebody that worked in film or television or music or anything really. And it was, thankfully, I think I discovered about making sound effects for the first time at university in the first year. And one of my friends told me about it. I didn't even know it was a job. Once I found out about it, I took a strong interest. And I was very grateful. While I was in a summer job working with young people, making sounds and filmmaking and so on, they brought me along to a tour of Pinewood Studios. At that time, still had a Foley stage, a working one. And it was the first time that I'd seen one before. And it was like coming home. It was amazing. It just, everything clicked. I didn't know what a Foley artist was. I didn't know what the job was. I didn't know that it existed. Then I saw that room and everything made sense. So, you know, when I was a kid, I would watch, still love them now, 80s action films, American 80s action films. And it's still one of my favourite sounds is people running up and down metal stairwells, you know, chasing away from the bad guys. And the sound of car tyres, you know, like going, not the squeal, not the, but the sounds that they make when you do it in the Foley stage, you know, you rub your foot or gloves on sort of a gravelly concrete surface. You get, you know, just as you're coming up to stop. And I loved that when I was a kid, and I didn't know why. And then just stepping into this room, realising that all this time there'd been people making these sounds in front of a screen, in front of a mic, you know, watching it on the screen. And yeah, that was a joy. But it was not something that I wasn't aware of this when I was younger, and it wasn't something I worked up to. It was definitely I'd like to work in music. I'm a shit musician. I'd like to record music, actually. Doesn't appeal to me quite as much because it wasn't for me as creative for me to work in, as opposed to seeing these sound effects being made and then realizing I could be bossy and make these sounds for myself instead of helping someone make their album. Yeah, the thought of spending all day picking up stuff and rattling it in front of the microphone really appealed. But yeah, it was definitely something that I discovered as I moved along.
And I know I mentioned a little bit in the intro, but kind of once you graduated, you know, it was a real constant persistence to kind of get to where you are now, right?
Oh, God. Well, I've got so many grey hairs, yeah. I think a lot of jobs in the creative arts are very difficult to come by, you know. They're enjoyable. There's a long list of people that want to do them. And Foley is no exception. You know, you graduate, you get a degree, and then it's like, okay, so what? And now you have to go and get your apprenticeship, which, it is very much the case of a kind of apprenticeship thing. It is definitely something you learn from the person before you. It's very old school, all of it. You know, recording sound effects in front of the mic is old school, and the way you get in is old school. And so, yeah, you have to be persistent. And I was aware of this. I was aware of it even when I thought I wanted to be a music producer. I was aware that my degree would mean nothing. It was definitely a case of, you know, I've got a grant, at least I can pay fees, I've got a loan, I can move to London and try and network and so on. And that's what it takes. So yeah, it was definitely a bit of a slog because nobody's paying you for quite some time. You know, you have to do a lot of short films, which a lot of them are a joy, some of them less so. And make mistakes, you know, make those mistakes early and learn and work with people that aren't, sounds harsh, but aren't going anywhere. You know, work with people whose films maybe aren't so great, and so there's not a long-term relationship with them. And then work with people whose films, oh yeah, this really inspired me, and you can work together and keep that relationship going. But yeah, it is a bit of a slog, and it definitely wasn't an overnight thing. But it can be for some. I know of people working as Foley artists, Foley editors, people that edit what we record and make sure everything's in time, take out stuff you don't want, double down with that, let's pitch shift that so it sounds deeper and fatter, making those creative decisions. Foley mixers, the people that record us, some of them have gone to university, got in straight in and met some amazing studios in London. This happens worldwide. You know, some things can be quite quick, but if they're not recruiting at that time, or you know, maybe your face doesn't fit or whatever, you know, or anything in between, you know, it takes a bit more persistence for sure to make the opportunity happen. You really have to carve it out sometimes.
Yeah, and I guess there's a lot of luck sometimes as well, just being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, you know, that is not to say that anyone that has got that timing bang on, you know, they definitely deserve to be there. But I definitely found it frustrating when, you know, sometimes I thought, oh man, if I'd have got in there, you know, a year early or a year later, maybe it would have been different. But that's just sometimes how it is.
So who do you typically work for now? So I mentioned Doctor Who, I mentioned a couple of films, Sex Education. So you're kind of primarily working on TV series and films, but, you know, who recruits you basically?
For me and for a lot of radio artists, it's either a studio or it's a freelance team. It goes one way or the other. Yeah, so Doctor Who and Sex Education, they're both a studio in Cardiff. I work with a lot, and the production company works with them, and then they hire me in. So, oh yeah, Lou can work on this. And whereas some other, you know, some films I've done recently, half of my friends now, are they clients, are they friends? It's a little bit of both, you know, then freelancer teams. So, you know, Jim, my mate, he'll bring me on, and he'll bring me on as a Foley editor and a Foley artist. Not many Foley artists do both. Some do. I like to edit what I've done afterwards and prep it in advance. It's good. I prefer working that way because you can really get your head into the film or program. Yeah, so it's a bit of a combo. And then sometimes, you know, somebody randomly will get in touch out of nowhere, so they've connected with you online. So it's a bit of a mixture. And you will get Foley artists that aren't freelance, that are full-time employed at studios as well.
Okay, talk me through a brief. So for a film, being recruited, how does that kind of go forward from there?
Once again, it depends. If I'm part of a freelance crew, yeah, and if I'm asked to be an editor as well. In the past, with, you know, previous studios I've worked full-time at, we've got that relationship, then yeah, you're brought in as early as the spotting session. Spotting session is where you'll sit with definitely the director, sometimes producers as well, the sound supervisor who looks after the whole set post-production sound process, maybe the editor, picture editor, dialogue editor, Foley editor, sound effects editor. We're all sitting there drinking tea and you watch the film through, and it's great because then you get in early, you start to know who the characters are. You know, want to know what the director's trying to get across, and that can really empower you to then, all right, that's when I'm off getting the right materials for that character. I want that character to sound, I want her cloth to sound scratchy and down and out, and I want her cloth to be sheeny and velvety and soft and luxurious. And you know, I've been in this particular film, that was my approach, but it's great. They get you in early and you can go to town. Hey, Star Wars, they got Ben Burtt, the sound designer in Star Wars, a year before they started shooting. And you know, we put in that work and we got the result out of it, amazing sound. So it can be like that. And I think if I'm editing it as well and I get a chance to, you know, see it in advance, then yeah, I can put a lot of energy into making sure that the Foley recording sessions run very smoothly and I'm recording the content that I want. But if I'm working for a studio and they've booked me for 5 days, most times I turn up, you know, with my bag of shoes and my bag of props and my bag of cloth and hope what I've bought is going to work. And you can be running, not running behind, but, you know, you just have to ask them, okay, what it's about, and then go into the room and you just get cracking. You don't get as much time to kind of really get to know the characters and stories. So you have to work a little bit more with your experience of you know, I've got the general gist. I have a feeling that that guy needs to sound really heavy and menacing, and there's probably something near the end of the film or program, end of series, that implies it will all come to a big head. And so if I get in early on the beginning of the program and make him sound mean, just with his feet, make sure that when I put his glass down, it's with a bit more beef, then it will help.
It sounds super fun. I guess it doesn't sound stressful in terms, especially if you've got a shortened brief and you're not brought on early and you have to really, like, you've got your bag of tricks and you're hoping that you'd be able to pull something out of it to make it work. Yeah, I'm curious, what's like the most fun or the most pleasing thing you've worked on?
Don't get me wrong. Like, you know, there's a lot of walkie-talkie, walk down the street, get in the car, go into the office, flap about with a load of files, you know, do a telephone, walk again. Bish, bash, bosh. Thank you very much. Here's my invoice. There's a lot of that stuff. There's a heck of a lot of that stuff. But done underwater Foley. I wasn't underwater. Let it. just a recording a shark, kind of shark horror film, you know, kind of teenagery, don't go in the water type stuff. And that was good fun. That was creative and enjoyable because we recorded everything normal. And then we came back and filled up a big bucket and put in cloths. Oh, I can't even remember. We had different pitches. So I think we put in some, quarter inch tape. And we recorded the sound of people like in the water, moving around in the water, high pitch, and then a cloth for low pitch again. This was for all five reels. And I was straddling this big pole of water that we might. I couldn't walk for 2 days afterwards because I just pulled lots of muscles. But it was great fun still trying to make bubbles and you know, move them in time to picture, little bubbles in time to the ones you see on the screen. It was quite detailed and hard, and therefore I loved it. Even recently, like the last series of Doctor Who, when the VFX is done with any of the monsters, then it's great because you can see what they've been working with the whole time. You kind of record around it. And then that's when you kind of look around the studio and you're like, okay, kind of look like rhinoceroses, but the kind of wearing leather and they've got space laser rifles. You know, there's definitely lots of, well, we've got a chamois leather, we've got some stones, and we've got some hair gel. Let's see what it sounds like. Creative moments like that where you're just having to create something. What does this monster sound like? It's up to you whether you can sell it to the audience. And 9 times out of 10 you can. You just look around and have a think, let's try that. Probably sounds good. Oh yeah, so it does. Fabulous. Yeah.
Are you like a collector of sounds? So, I mean, your ears must be so finely tuned that whenever you're out and about, you'd be like, oh, that would be so good for that thing I was briefed on the other day.
Yeah, I don't carry my recorder anymore. I've been banned. that's a great squeak. Listen to it. Yeah, it's hard to switch off. I'm always listening, but it helps. It gives you an idea for later. So, you know, even just a nice ramble in a woodland, and when you get to a really muddy bit, and there's like crispy leaves on top. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Interesting texture there. You've got the high frequency of the dry leaf, and then you've got the low mid of the gloopy mud. So when you're in the Foley stage later, you can think, all right, you know, well, let's make our mud surface, but actually let's add some crispiness if I want to make it leafier. Yeah, it doesn't stop. You don't ever stop. And I'm hoping not to until my last day, because that's the joy. I think it's a constant learning curve. Yeah. We've all got that opportunity to learn more and think more and change how we do things a little bit more.
Yeah, and I guess sounds don't really change. Obviously, technology and the way we interact with it changes, and that has a load of sound effects with it, but that's just like an evolution. Like you're saying, mud and leaves will always sound like mud and leaves.
Foley, I think, is the last, one of the last areas in sound post-production where we're still going, you know, with dialogue and with sound effects. You know, people right now are working at home in their studios before you're working on tape in a big studio. But with Foley, it is still old school. It hasn't much changed. The recording medium has changed, definitely, working onto computers rather than tape. But the practice hasn't changed massively. And our working days, dialogue editor, sound effects editors, they're working long hours. We don't. We're still pretty much 8 to 5 or 9 to 6, the lunch and 2 breaks. Because it is quite physical. You can't work much longer than that. And
yeah.
You hear it in your body, you get tired and you lose focus and concentration. As digital as we are right now, where we're talking via Zoom on our laptops, but the real world is very analogue. And, you know, once I get in that studio, I'm thinking leather, wood, glass, metal, and cotton. It's all going to those.
Sounds like a party.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the thinking of just those materials. And yes, we use more plastic now, and, you know, mobile phones and so on. But if I want a good creak, I don't go to plastic. I go to wood or to metal, very much in the analog world still. Or at least it is to me.
I actually hadn't thought of how physical it was. So you mentioned like hugging the big bowl of water for the sharks film. And then actually, you know, of course you're on, you know, making footsteps, lifting things, putting things together. It must be physically exhausting. And you're like, the level of concentration when you're listening to audio and sound, it's like another frequency almost is that you're tapping into, like, you know, tuning into. So yeah, it must be really tiring actually.
Yeah, it's great. I love it a bit. I am knackered. I'm knackered when I get home. It is, you know, get home, make some beans on toast, lie on the sofa, bed. It's physically hard, like you say. It's certainly on the days we record feet. Imagine if you went to a shoe shop and then you couldn't decide what shoes you wanted for 8 hours.
I can't imagine that, sorry.
All right, so, you know, pick up your shoes, walk on the spot, sit down, put another pair of shoes on, stand up, walk on the spot, sit down, put another pair of shoes on, get up, walk on the spot. And that is pretty much it for the whole day. You know? And whilst watching that screen and trying to get within, I'm generally 5 frames late. I can be quicker. And it takes a lot of focus. Foley artists have a strange face when we work, which is very big eyes. And our mouth is always open, so that, I guess, so we're not breathing through our nose too much, because you can hear it on the mic. So you've kind of got a gormless look. You're sort of focusing so much on the screen. You stop and you blink and it is a physical job. And I think it does get easier the longer you do it, because you can shortcut in your brain. You can start to predict, as long as somebody is not acting drunk or in a fight or anything, if they're just plain walking, you can pretty much predict their pace. Those first few years, I came up with a headache every day.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, for people that don't work in film and TV, you know, 5 frames is 1/5 of a 25 frames per second. You know, it's like so small and so minute that, you know, getting on or off is going to be, you know, hit or miss, isn't it? Until obviously you're finally tuned like yourself. But yeah, I guess it takes a lot of practice.
We can edit it, we can move it, but there's a little bit of pride involved as well.
Of course.
And 3 frames, I'll be really chuffed.
So I guess as well, the nature of what you do, I think it'd be fair to say, is that maybe access to opportunities are maybe suppressed a little bit more by kind of like a pipeline, because it's such a niche area of the industry and it's not a huge, you know, department that's, you know, churning out loads and loads of apprentices and all that kind of stuff. So in terms of finding work or work finding you, you've mentioned that, you know, you've got people that are now friends and they'll get you involved, etc. In your experience, have you felt like there's been points of blockage and trying to find your feet and get your foot through the door?
Oh god, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can only, there's a little bit of presumption on my part, because it's not like interviews with, I say, normal jobs. I'm going to say normal jobs, I can't think of a better word of it, where you say, oh, thank you for application, but unfortunately, you know, you don't really get that. There's studios, there's definitely studios out there that don't hire women. It's not a policy that they put on their website, but there are, you know, I think there's been people that have wanted to, you know, work at a couple of studios, and it's only ever chaps, and so are all freelance women that have worked there, maybe not had such a good time with it. Yeah. And that is a barrier. There's not a lot we can do about it. It's such a film industry, sound industry, just a sound industry. It's very small, you know, it's very unregulated, because they're all small companies. The first studio I worked in, not Foley, this is just a sound effects advertising. The chap, he brought me in as I was doing a bit of kit hire and social media marketing, but he knew I wanted to do sound, and, you know, I'd do as much as I could. As soon as I got all the marketing and, you know, sales done, I'd be, you know, straight there wanting to help. And he just said, you know, women can't do sound. We're receptionists. So, excuse me, I just, and it's just like, oh, lemonade.
Oh God, it's so, yeah, it wasn't that long ago as well. That's a frustrating thing. And I just made that assumption because I think, actually, you mentioned it earlier, which kind of crystallized it a bit for me. Because Foley hasn't really changed from its inception, and it's such a niche part of filmmaking, I can see how, obviously, once you establish a career, you carry that on, and then you may take on an apprentice, and that apprentice would typically be someone that looked and sounded like you.
Yeah.
And so I, because, you know, when I was thinking about it, I was thinking, I'm sure there must be like these invisible / visible barriers that, you know, you come up against all the time.
I mean, in fairness, Foley itself has been better than some other areas of sound. In the UK, Beryl the Boot, never met her. She passed away before I entered the industry. Beryl Mortimer is a real name, but she was known as Beryl the Boot. She was a Foley artist in the UK. Oh, when did she start? In the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s? I think it was the 90s that she retired. And she trained so many of the Foley artists that are working now, a little bit just ahead of me. Well, a little bit ahead of me, sorry, forgive me. The generation ahead of me that are working now. But her influence has kind of gone down. And I'm thinking of the Foley artists in the UK at the moment and America. There's, I don't know, it used to be a lot more women, because a lot of Foley artists would come from a dance or theatrical background, particularly in the States. So they were, and the UK in fairness, we've got Foley artists right now, great Foley artists who also work in the theatre, you know, as actors. So they had, you know, if you were a good dancer, you had good rhythm, particularly in America. You had a good dancer, you had good rhythm, then you could walk footsteps really well. It was often seen as a little bit of a job to kind of pay the rent when you're acting or dancing. The jobs were in between jobs, and actually they then ended up taking it on full time. We've had a few more women actually compared to dialogue or sound effects, mixing as well, sound supervision. But then, I don't know, like you say, you know, we don't have any unconscious bias training in the industry. So yeah, you know, if the studio likes working with chaps, they're taking on someone, they want someone that walks and talks and looks like them, you know, unconsciously perhaps, and being presumptive. But there's been a lot more male Foley artists worldwide in the last 20 years, maybe 10 years, 20 years. Are they going to be open to hiring more women and more people of colour? Not massively confident. It's a bit of a challenge, it's a barrier, so like all industries.
Yeah, for sure. I just think, yeah, especially with more specific or in such a smaller part of the industry, I guess change sometimes can happen slower, but it does sound like there's loads of positives as well. What was the woman's name? Barbara the Brute.
Beryl the Boot.
Oh, Beryl the Boot. I really was like, man, what a great name to be called Brute. Her sounds are so brutish.
Foley artists can be a bit brutish. Some of them have been hard to train for. I've been very lucky. Everyone I've studied from or learnt from has been very kind. But yeah, some people haven't been so kind to them as well. Some people have had to have quite thick skins to carry on.
What are you talking about? Being offered a receptionist job is really kind.
Oh, what a prick. I don't know.
How have things been faring since lockdown and COVID-19 has kind of hit our kind of everyday landscape?
I've got a very clean house at the moment. I'm seeing it as an opportunity to rest my body and to clean my shoes and to get all my props fixed and tidy and ready. We're not doing any work at the moment. Most of the Foley stages have been shut down. You know, even any that are running, they're going to be running out of projects because filming has stopped at the moment in the UK. I don't know about, I imagine it's probably worldwide at the moment. So yeah, so not a lot doing it.
I guess it's just like most of the creative industries at the moment, everything's on a hiatus and it's just waiting for the doors to be open again.
Yeah, very much so. You know what frustrates me the most is sex education. I can't wait to work on the next series. I love working on it so much, and they didn't get a chance to film anything. I'm thinking, how on earth, how can you do it without being closer than 2 feet? Considering it's so much of it is about relationships.
About sex.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that series. It must be such a joy to work on. I mean, visually, it's just so punchy, but, you know, in terms of story, in terms of kind of endearing, yeah, and obviously in case of sound, brilliant.
Yeah, it's really good fun. So the studio I work, Bang is a studio in Cardiff, and I've been working for them for a while, and they said, oh, we've got this new series, and they let me watch the episodes in advance, and it's kind of a rare case. I'll watch it and think, I can't wait to watch the next episode, rather than, okay, right, I need to bring these kind of shoes in, looking at these surfaces, oh, I better bring that prop. But actually, I can't wait to watch the next episode. And so I knew from the beginning it was going to be really good. But it was hard work. You know, there's so many main characters, and they're on the screen at the same time. Bloody hell. That and dinner scenes are a bony nightmare. You know? So it was hard work to do, hard work to get everything covered that we needed to get covered. Yeah, it was hard work, but it's so enjoyable. But the last series, you know, we were so excited to work on it. Yeah, and when you, I think, you know, anything, if you enjoy what you're working on, then the work you do is better. You know, it's well acted, it's well shot. So it just makes your job a lot easier. You're not polishing a turd. can be you know, a bit challenging, and you don't bring out your best work. But well acted, well shot, well edited as well. Continuity is a bit of an arse for me sometimes, you know. But if it's everything that is coming together nicely, then yeah, it's a lot more effortless. We've made some great sounds in that series. Really. Mm. So, sounds to make other sounds. I think we used a hot water bottle for dildo, is it a dildo? Or something like that. You know, didn't have one to hand. Okay, you know, and great fun of kind of making these sounds, you know, of stuff you don't normally have to have. Don't have sex toys, find a hot water bottle. Those sex scenes, you know, they're fun sex scenes to work on. What I can't stand is slow motion loving scenes. You can't really do much. Silly squeaky beds and you know, all that kind of tables, you know, or on the counter worktops, you know, with the two teachers shouting out Baba Ganoush, Baba Ganoush, Baba Ganoush. And so, yeah, you're just rattling tables and stuff. I'll take that over a dry series any day of the week.
Oh, well, hopefully it gets back up and running soon with our partial unlock at the moment. And I'm telling you, in the next series, I will be so focused on the sound. So focused.
Not that hot water bottle. Yeah,
I might blush a little bit at that point. Okay. All right, so can you tell me what skills would you say are needed to be a Foley artist?
Imagination, first and foremost. And what the great thing is lots of people have it. Kids have it. It's great fun asking young people, well, what do you use to make this sound? Because they don't go by the rules quite so much. So you can look around and think of something unusual. Finding inner calm is be a good asset, because deadlines are tight and they only ever get tighter. They don't get easier. And so if you've got a lot of work to do and running out of time, and then suddenly some building work happens and your Foley mixer is stressing out massively, because it's on them more than the Foley artist to get, make sure that the session goes through successfully on time. If you get stressed, then your body tenses up, and then your brain isn't thinking about the character. You're not in the emotions of that scene anymore. You're now thinking, shit, are we going to get this done in time? And you hear it. You can really hear it. In your body, you can hear it in those feet, you can hear it with the hands on the table, you can hear it all. So trying to be relaxed in that kind of state, which is easy to say the longer you do it for. The first ever thing I recorded in a Foley stage, I did a footstep on Another Hood. It was years ago, 2010, a long time ago. All I could hear was my heartbeat. I couldn't hear anything. They were talking to me, I was looking at the screen, and all I could hear was my heartbeat in my ears. I was full of so much adrenaline, it was the loudest footstep I've ever made in my life. We do it about 8 times. Oh god, it was awful. Having a relaxed state of mind, even if it's not instinctive, is something to work on, and it is helpful. Maybe a sense of rhythm. I wouldn't say I have it, I'm not musical, but I think it's passion. I think you just have to be really interested in this hidden art. We call Foley artists, but I'd say we're Foley actors. We really are just acting the screen using body language instead of language. A little bit of diva-ish helps, but if you don't want to be complete centre of the screen, then I think it's something well suited. I think if you've got a really strong interest in body language and watching people communicate, so and watching how people move, if you're the kind of person that will sit in a room and there's a load of people hanging out and you're quite enjoying just watching everything happen, that's me anyway. So I will watch people interact and quite like them running into the studio and then helping other people, you know, helping what's on screen, helping these people interact, but just using the body. It's quite a useful approach, because you can put those things in there, you can help those little subtle moments come across. People will absorb it when they're watching it at home or in the cinema. They're not conscious of it, but they will notice these things.
Yeah, I really agree with that, especially with sound and also with visuals. There's so much that's going on that we feel but don't see or hear. I love that. So what advice? So someone either still at school or thinking a change of career, what advice would you give them in terms of if they wanted to pursue Foley artist career?
I went and studied. I didn't need to, but it just created a very long path. You know, I mean, I think it does help to know as much as you can about sound post-production, because nowadays so many of us are, you know, not a Foley artist, I'm a Foley editor, a bit sound effects, and, you know, being more multi-skilled is probably quite helpful these days, because it's less common to have one job and stick at that. So I think maybe having a bit of a background knowledge of how the software that we record onto works. There's a book called The Foley Grail. Nice. I read that years ago. I've still got it on my shelf. And actually, it's by a Foley artist in America. And she gives a good oversight as to actually what happens, how your day looks like. The best way is to kind of meet Foley mixers and try and get into studios. Studios hold the key. Some studios still hire full-time people. They're never averse to having runners or people volunteer their time to come in and help out. But I mean, before even doing that, I would say I wanted to be a Foley artist for quite some time and it wasn't happening. And so I just, when people asked me what I did, I just said I was a Foley artist, even though it really wasn't. I did one short film. I thought, fuck it, that'll do. And as soon as I treated myself like a Foley artist, then other people did as well. Oh, that's Lily, she's a Foley artist. Really? Yeah, she worked on a short film. And then in the meantime, just try and learn. So I started out wearing different shoes in my lounge with the telly on mute and, you know, just daytime television. And I just walked everybody. Anytime anyone walked on the screen, you know, I'd just follow them, but I'd walk on the spot. I didn't get the process completely right, but it got me into the habit. Walking on the spot whilst copying someone is quite unusual. And most people, when they first start it, you know, you suddenly become all left, you know, two left feet or two right feet. It's worthwhile practicing. And then from there, going to train stations or, you know, just standing outside your house. You look a bit weird while you do it. You have to get over this. And just walk on the spot, copying someone walking down the street or walking on the opposite train platform to you. And just walking in time with them and then stopping as they do, noticing any shuffles. Because the feet is the hardest thing to perfect. I was told this when I started and I thought, oh, God, it's going to take me 5 years. And it does. And even now, I'm still getting better every year. It does take a while. So the earliest that you can start practicing, you know, just be a Foley artist. Just be a Foley artist at home if you have to do it first. But the good thing is once you get your head into that game, then, you know, you can try and find filmmakers starting out, help them with their short films. It does require software and a microphone and everything at home. So it does take a while to accumulate some of the bits, but they don't have to be massively expensive. My kit was quite cheap at first. And you don't need a studio. All the stuff I started out with, just go out with a mic stand, the mate, like a bribe along. And even if you don't have the picture, if you've watched it enough times in your head and just remember the scene and then try and remember to walk it all out. I used to hit chain link fences. I needed those sounds. So try and remember it, perform it, come home and then try and make sense of it. And still being a Foley artist, you don't have to be working on a Bond film in a big studio to be doing the same thing.
Yeah, that's awesome advice. Just start building up your own skill set where you can.
Yeah.
So what's been one of the biggest challenges in your career?
So I was, it's a sound design for advertising company. And yeah, the governor, he was a kind of Trumpy character. He was a tough guy to work for. It really affected my confidence working in. You know, even now, sometimes I think, oh, I can't do sound design. I could be a Foley artist, but the sound design, I'm talking really abstract sounds, you know, making the sound of a laser hitting something and cutting through metal. So it's not, you're not looking for literal sounds here. It's very creative stuff. And it is hard work, but it really knocked me. And it still lingers now, irritatingly enough. When I left that company, I left it and I thought, no, this guy's an idiot for a start, but also I really want to be doing Foley artistry. I think that's more my thing. And it was such a joy, I think, getting that first credit, you know, because, you could do it, shut up. Women do make amazing receptionists as much as we make amazing Foley artists and sound designers and all the rest of it. Falls to you, mate. Getting in, I think, is the hardest thing. Definitely, I think the challenges are stronger at the start, getting past idiots, so getting your foot in the door. Yeah, and from then on, you hopefully can get some nice relationships with good people, good clients, and keep them in. It's a little bit easier after that.
So now you've kind of got to that stage. What would you say you love about your job?
It's a bit naughty. It's a bit sneaky. I love it. I love, you know, people sitting down Sunday evening. There's always drama on British television. the bodyguard killing Eve. And I love everyone just sitting there, dreading the week to come and just being entertained for an hour and not thinking. And, you know, it's not just Sam, but really, it's everyone that's working in this process. But yeah, I love the fact that they have no idea that, you know, the person's whose feet they're listening to, who's, you know, the doctor, Doctor Who. I love the fact that they think that the sound of the sonic screwdriver or whatever she's interacting with is Jodie Whittaker. It's not, it's me. Or Gareth, who's another Foley artist who works, he did with the, he also works for Doctor Who, as does Sue and as does Melly, with about four of us that work there, all amazing Foley artists. Yeah, I love the fact we're cheating everyone. It's great. It's I don't know why. I take a lot of pleasure in that. A bit weird.
I don't know. It's connected to magic, I'm sure of that, because it's that notion of, you know, like I said before, is, you know, in the intro, you're not necessarily hearing those horses' hooves, but we don't realize it. And there's something like really, like you said, it's secretive about it. It's like, I'm making that noise and no one knows.
You've ruined it, Renee. Now everybody knows.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, good Foley, you don't notice it. It's only when it's bad, that's when you notice it. So I don't think I have ruined it. I think people will appreciate, they might reflect later going, yeah, the sound was so good. I didn't even register. It wasn't distracting me in any way.
Yeah, true.
So how do you fuel your own creativity? Where do you go? What do you do?
All the creativity seems to come out in the studio. The rest of the time, it comes out in cooking and gardening. I don't make any art. I don't do stuff in my own time. I tidy, I garden, I make things ship shape and bring order into the world. And then I get to the Foley stage and I'm like a white mess.
I think gardening is quite creative though. Because you switch off, but you've also got this whole process going on. So, I mean, obviously, we're still in partial lockdown. We don't really know what's going on. What's coming up for you? More tidying? Or what have you got? What's on the horizon for the next month or so?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I've got the next series of Keeping Faith, the BBC series. I think that was in the books, as well as obviously the new series of Sex Education. These are all going to be delayed massively. So, to be honest, in the meantime, I've enjoyed giving the mind a break. I've enjoyed giving my body a break. I'm now starting to think I need to probably put some more energy in learning. So I love computer game sound. I've wanted to work in it for a long while. But the software is really hard to learn. And the process, it's non-linear. Film and TV, it starts and it ends and it moves along. And game is very, very different. And I'd quite like to, I think, make the opportunity to learn, even if it's not ever practically used, I'd quite like to learn the process, because a lot of 3D artists actually now do work on games. It's usually the cutscenes, stuff in between. The stories are quite in-depth now. I think I'd like to learn a bit more of that. Otherwise, it is going to be a lot of gardening and tidying.
So it's been so fab catching up, and we haven't caught up properly for years, as we've established prior to us pressing record. So before you go, something I ask everyone, two questions. Is there a career job in the creative industries you've always wanted to know a little bit more about, and then potentially can find someone and get them on the podcast? And also a woman that you would recommend I reach out to and get onto Greater Than 11%.
Speaking of computer games, how do I make them? I've got a lot of friends who work on sound for games, but I mean, and I kind of get what they're doing, but the whole game development, I don't quite know. I know it's hard work, and I know that the work is very, there's studios that close, there's big job openings, big job closures, and that's about all I know. And at the end come these, you know, these games are, you know, the budgets are, you know, it costs a lot of money to buy them, therefore people are probably spending more money on their games than subscriptions to streaming services. So it's a massive industry, and yet it's something behind the scenes I don't know a huge amount about. So it's a game developer, that's probably not the right
producer reason. Maybe as well, games producer would know the whole process.
Oh yeah, exactly. Forgive me for not knowing the right
I don't know if that's the right term either, so I shall investigate. Yeah, I know that gaming is top revenue versus Hollywood now. So in terms of cinema, gaming's one has bigger budgets, but they're also bringing in a lot more revenue. It's kind of obviously moving a lot more that way. And who would you suggest I reach out to and get on Greater Than 11%?
There's a sound designer, sound artist, composer, Maria Tueji. She She's a Londoner. She's based in Cardiff. I think it'd be interesting to learn, I know it sounds, sorry, but the abstracts, the relationship between music and sound design, which is the very, a little bit more abstract, you know, the sound you can't see, and how they work in creating these sort of soundscapes for the film, I think might be quite interesting.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. You don't need to be sorry that it's about sound. Lou, so lovely to catch up with you. Thank you.
Cheers, my dears.
Thank you for listening. We are trying to reach as many people as possible to inspire and create change. If you enjoyed, please rate, review, and share the podcast, as it really helps spread the message. If you're looking for more information on what we do or how to get involved, go to greaterthan1111.com.